on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, that's me. Right, that's me. It's, what was I telling somebody? It's like, it's a sociology term, cocktail halo. Can be carrying on any sort of conversation that you like, and you hear your name mentioned elsewhere, and you immediately perk up and go, why are you talking about me? Oh, that's because it's your time to be on the radio. Thanks for tuning in to the Sunday morning wake-up call here on WNRN. Special thanks to those folks in Harrisonburg on 95.1. You should be with us today. And we're here thanks to the folks at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. This weekend, Blue Ridge Mountain Sports featuring their Fleece Navidad event. You'll find value on the fleece jackets from Mountain Hardware, Patagonia, and others. Details are at brms.com or at your nearby Blue Ridge Mountain Sports store. You can find them in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville at the Lexington Commons and Chesterfield Town Center at Richmond. All right, folks, thanks for joining in, because today, this is one of those important shows, not that the others aren't, but, you know, culturally important, community important, not just, I didn't know that. We'll get a lot more out of this one. Some of that because we have got some really cool women with us today, and, you know, I love to surround myself with really cool women. First, let's test those microphones. Erin Miller, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Rick. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. And it's nice to hear that always when I'm in the room with folks. And over on the other mic, we have Michelle Zaire.
That's correct. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing quite well. Although I am going to turn up your microphone a little bit. Although that sounds like I turned it up a little too much. We got some other radio station static in there somewhere. All right, Michelle, you are the adult advocate with the Sexual Assault Resource Agency?
That is correct.
Are there others?
We actually do have one other adult advocate, and her name is Latoria White. And she essentially serves clients in the outlying counties of our service area, which is commonly called the Region 10 area. So that would be the city of Charlottesville, Albemarle County, Fluvanna, Greene, Nelson, and Louisa County. So she's in the outlying counties, and I serve clients in Charlottesville and Albemarle.
That's a big range.
It is.
For the Sexual Assault Resource Agency.
It is.
And Erin, you are the child advocate.
Yes.
And tell me a little bit about what that definition is.
Sure. That means that I work with children up through 18 and their families.
All right. So there you go. There's our guest today, Michelle Zaire, Erin Miller. Conversation today is about the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, commonly known as the acronym SARA in our town. And it's the 30th anniversary of the organization, correct?
Yes, that's right. We're actually going to have a breakfast on Tuesday morning to celebrate that and to honor one of our first directors, Annette Grimm.
Are you having waffles? I'm a big waffle fan. I can't get the cooks at the store to make waffles for me. I've asked Sonia to make waffles for me. Hasn't happened. She probably would do it for Rusty. To move on in a more serious note, Sexual Assault Resource Agency, with their upcoming 30th anniversary, and you know, that's a good reason to have, sort of good time to have a little focus on SARA, which is why Michelle and Erin are here today. But there's so much more than just throwing a party for the 30th birthday kind of thing. Ladies, I don't know who wants to jump in here, but let's talk about the beginning of SARA. It had a different name 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
Correct?
It did. Actually, in 1974 is when it sort of was born, and it was started as from a group of women in the community who were just concerned about what they saw going on in their community. And when it was created, it was known as the Charlottesville Rape Crisis Group. And it was a total volunteer organization for the first 10 years, actually. And it wasn't until 1984 that they were able to get a little bit of funding from the federal government, and it made it possible to hire their first part-time executive director. And then finally, in 1986, that's when Annette Grimm, the woman that we're honoring, was hired as the executive director. And she was tasked with a pretty big job of expanding the agency's services and And we were functioning at a tiny little budget of $29,000, $900 a year. So,
and how many volunteers and whatever workers did you have at that time?
Yeah, at that time there was a volunteer pool of 9. So it was literally one of those grassroots organizations that started from concerned community members, which is amazing, you know, that we're still going strong today. It's a really great thing to be part
that
of.
That is amazing that you start with volunteers of 9. Why was there a name change?
There was a couple of reasons. The name change happened in 1989, and that's when it became SARA. And I think part of it was that, you know, we were in the process culturally of expanding what it meant to be sexually assaulted and what sexual violence was. So they wanted to get the name rape out of the name. And so the acronym Sexual Assault Resource Agency, that's what they came up with. And then, of course, that is what we're still called today.
Ladies, again, we're talking about the Sexual Assault Resource Agency here today. We're going to do a little background and history of the organization since their 30th anniversary is on the calendar, and talk a little bit about the topic of sexual assault itself. So give us a few minutes and then we'll open the phone lines 979-0919 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, because while SARA may not reach out to your toll-free area, you can use the toll-free number to call in about the topic. Michelle Zare, Aaron Miller here with us today. Ladies, was there one incident that prompted this organization, I guess at the time, the Charlottesville Rape Crisis Group? Did I write that down properly?
I'm not sure there's one incident, but, you know, this was back in 74 in the midst of the, you know, feminist movement, and a lot of people's kind of human rights were being brought to the forefront. And, you know, there's an old saying called the personal is political, which essentially means that a lot of times you don't realize that there is a bigger cultural issue until you start talking to your other community members. And, you know, I have a hunch that's probably what started happening with these concerned, you know, women who started realizing this is bigger than a bigger problem than just one person here and one person there. This is a cultural and a communal problem.
Let me ask you, though. So there's not one. There wasn't a big newsworthy event that happened. This is more of a group of individuals sitting around talking and learning that there's more to it than something that happened to me 5 years ago.
That's what we're suspecting.
Well, because you also had some numbers to share, which, again, as I often find out when we do a show of this sort, like, you're kidding me. The numbers are that high?
Sure. It's 1 in 4 women and 1 in 8 men have been sexually assaulted in their life. And we suspect that 1 in 8 is actually low, that it's very underreported for men.
Why would that be? Why would men underreport? Just, I mean, is this an egotistical thing about I don't want to admit that
somewhat
is demeaning a right word here?
Maybe. I think some of what I hear, especially in teens, is some of the boys saying, How can a guy ever not want it? The idea of someone taking that right away is just something very odd for them to think about. So I think if you grow up and you think that there's no way you could ever not want to have sex, that how can that ever happen to me? So in that situation, if it happens, then there's a lot of strange feelings, a lot of thoughts about why did this happen, or maybe I really did want it to happen, a lot of questioning about themselves.
Well, let's talk about some of the definitions, because some of the questions that from me that follow that comment are, and I'll try and be somewhat radio safe here, as we talk about a guy not wanting it. Well, I guess that's based on the fact that physically, there's a response from a guy, and so if that happens, then you must want it.
Right. I think that's part of the misconceptions, that we think of it more in that way, and that even if your body does respond, man or woman, that it does not mean that you actually wanted it to happen.
All right. So give me some definitions here about sexual assault.
Okay. You know, first and foremost, one of the myths that we're all, you know, constantly trying to debunk is the fact that, you know, sexual assault is not about sex. It's not about physical pleasure. It's actually about power and control. And sexual assault, first and foremost, whether or not that's happened to you, it's defined by you as the individual, which makes it a little bit tricky sometimes when you're...
All right, stop. Repeat that.
Okay. Whether or not an experience is considered sexual assault is defined by the individual who experienced it.
Okay, so that goes, that ties into, and now I can't think of the phrase, but when you are, but at work, because we talked about this a couple months ago, Sean McCord, who's answering the phones and producing the show today, where we had a group come in here talking about sexual abuse at work. And even though the guy may be telling the dirty joke and just thinking that it's funny, dirty joke, it's the person who heard it who defines whether or not they were bothered by it.
Exactly.
Sure. All right, so go back, sorry.
Okay, no, that's actually a great point to make. So just sort of a definition, a sexual assault is any type of contact of a sexual nature when someone did not want it to happen, no matter what. And, you know, although there's times there's a lot of aggression and violence involved, there's other times when it's simply, you know, words or pressure or suggestions or guilt tripping. And, you know, these seemingly harmless behaviors can end up causing a great deal of turmoil for the people who didn't want this to happen. So, you know, we want to see this type of attitude change, and our stance is that no matter what a person did or did not do leading up to an assault, no one ever deserves to have their choice about sexual contact taken away from them. And so that's where it becomes a very highly individualized definition.
All right. You, what I heard there, I heard two things. I heard contact, and then you said some phrases after that that were... not contact.
Exactly.
So I'm confused a little bit about how can sexual assault be contact and then non-physical contact?
Well, that's, I mean, if we think about contact as not just touching, contact is hearing words. Contact is having a feeling. Contact is receiving a text or an email from someone. So you can receive a contact, and I think we normally think of contact as a touch, or something that someone's doing to us in a physical way, but that's not necessarily true when we're talking about sexual assault.
Well, and I don't know the answer to this. I don't know if the two of you do. For criminal purposes, through the police department and the legal system, I believe that assault has to involve some physical contact, whether you do it with your fist or you do it with a stick, you know, you hit someone in some manner. Is that true? And then with sexual contact, it loses that definition or broadens the definition of assault?
Sure. I think it gets a little more tricky when we're talking about legal statutes, because the law does look, even still today, a little bit more at physical proof. But I think we're seeing a lot more moving into other kinds of proof. Say, for example, texts on a cell phone or emails that you find that can be used as evidence, in a court case, but it's very tricky and those types of things are a lot harder to prove.
All right. Let me, I'll save some of that for later on in the program, because I think for now I want to stick to we'll save the legal part of it for a little bit, and let's talk about some of the definition and what Sexual Assault Resource Agency does and the services that are provided. Again, Sexual Assault Resource Agency, or SARA, the 30th anniversary upcoming. Guest today, Aaron Miller, who's the child advocate working with individuals and families up to the age of 18, and Michelle Zare, the adult advocate for adults, individuals, both men and women over the age of 18. Online, and what's the website address? Do you know?
The website is saraceville.org, so that's SARACVILLE.org.
I found that things were defined as abused, violated, or harassed. for sexual assault, at least through the organization and services provided. What different services are provided for those three, you know, whether or not I have myself who might be harassed, a friend who might have been abused, and a family member who might have been violated?
That's a really great question.
I'm full of those today.
It's true.
We thank you for that. You know, the thing about our agency is that what we are there to do is to help immediately put control back into that survivor's court, where they're the ones that are choosing what path and, you know, the things they need to do to be able to heal from this experience. So we are essentially there to, you know, provide them with the support that they need, provide them with resources, and allow them to be empowered once again, because a lot of times, you know, most of the time the experience of being, you know, having the violence committed upon you is you've had that control taken away. So we want that control given back to them. And the ways that we do that, we have kind of attack it from two different ways, prevention and intervention. And Erin does a lot more with the prevention side of things with children, and I'll let her speak about that.
Sure. Just to talk about that a little bit, we do a lot of work in the schools, specifically in classrooms, K through 12. We also are trying to reach out and do presentations to guidance counselors, teachers, medical personnel, basically anyone that is interested in hearing more about sexual assault.
Okay, so you're working with folks under the age of 18,
mm-hmm.
or in the school system. I can imagine speaking with even middle schoolers and high schoolers and guidance counselors. But how do you have this conversation with elementary school kids? And I have two parts to this. One is, other than the don't let anyone touch you there, what sort of information is given? And second, do you run into parents who say, you will not have that conversation with my kid, even in the school system?
First of all, yes, we do have parents that do that. So what most of the schools do, I would even say all of them, they give out a permission slip to the parents, and then they have an option to opt out of the program. But what we've even found is that most parents do want it, that it's such a tough topic to bring up at home that it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. So if someone else can bring it up and talk about it, so much the better. There's always a few that don't want it talked about, but we found that most people are interested, and specifically going back about what we actually talk about at the elementary school level, what we're doing right now is basically what the school wants. For example, last week we were doing presentations in kindergarten in a Louisa County elementary school, and we talked about boundaries. My personal space is what we called it with the kids, and just talked about general touching, you know, who can be near you, that it's not appropriate for someone to be touching you, not even in a sexual manner, but starting out simple and talking about boundaries so that they can learn at a young age what's appropriate and what's not.
What sort of follow-up questions do you get from a kindergartner? I mean, is there, you do this and they sit there and watch, and obviously I've announced many times on this program I don't have any children, and so some of these topics are a little tough for me because I have no reference for it. But and Erin, you know, I reference you because you're the person doing this, but do you
sure.
stand at the front of the classroom sort of like, you know, using yourself as, you know, or do you take in a mannequin? Do the kids follow up and go raise their hands and say, oh, well, what about this? I just have a hard time recognizing that a five-year-old, a six-year-old would follow along in any sort of logical manner.
Sure. I think if you're thinking about it in a way of us standing up in front of a group giving a presentation, it would seem kind of odd. I personally don't like those types of presentations where you're just talking at someone. So actually we have the kids doing it themselves. We do some things with hula hoops because that's a very good visual for them.
Interesting.
To give an idea that, you know, this much space should be yours. And they also, in the schools, talk about a bubble, that they have a bubble around them that's only their space to be in. And so we do some activities in the hula hoops. We do some, you know, different activities like jumping jacks and things like that. So they get the idea of what space is theirs. And then even things like walking in the line and practicing different ways that they can keep their personal space and think about, okay, if we're in a circle and we're really close together, how does that feel? That's not comfortable. How can we make it more comfortable? How can you feel better and, you know, take a step back, get your own space again?
All right. This is the Sexual Assault Resource Agency Program, 30th anniversary. Michelle Zare is the adult advocate in the room. Erin Miller, the child advocate. As we talk about the history of Sarah and the services they offer, and a little bit later we're going to get into a little more legal information, I guess. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Sean McCord out there taking the calls if you have any. And let me share the weather. Marcus of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today. Highs in the upper 60s, partly clouded tonight, lows 45 to 50, mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the mid-60s. Right now, it's partly cloudy in the valley, we're 51, clear in Lynchburg, and 68, cloudy in Richmond and 64, and pretty nice in Charlottesville, we're at 62.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank NBC29 for their support today. Always looking for ways to improve their award-winning website. Your comments and suggestions are welcome at viewercomments@nbc29.com. That's NBC29. And WNRN reminds you, everyone who contributed to the Fall Fund Drive, that Friday, November 27th could be your lucky day. If you use your Integral Yoga Premium Sheet offer, that's that red thing we gave out with all the coupons on it, if you use it before 5 p.m. on the 27th, we'll do a drawing that could make your next couple of grocery runs to IY real cheap. We'll draw for a winner of $100 in groceries from among those who've used the Premium Sheet offer and left their contact info in the blanks. That offer will continue valid through its expiration date, but if you use it before the 27th, you could win the $100 worth of groceries from IY and WNRN. All right, back in action with Michelle and Erin. And you, if you have a question, NBC29. What in the world did that pop into my mind? In 979-0919. They just got a free underwriting plug. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Call up with your question or comment. Ladies, one of the things that I read on the website was you have a hotline, and we'll go ahead and offer that hotline number out now for somebody who's listening and just wants to jot it down for later maybe.
Okay. It is a 24-hour hotline. It is confidential, and the number for that is 434-977-7273.
And one of the things that was listed on there that the hotline mentions that they immediately believe the caller.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about belief versus non-belief. Why is that so important? Why would you list that as believe the caller right away?
That is probably one of the worst fears that a survivor may have to prevent them from reaching out for help, is that they're not going to be believed. Their story is not going to be believed, or they're going to be doubted that, you know, this happened. And then we sort of live in a culture where we do a lot of victim blaming. And so as opposed to saying, you know, why aren't we sending the message that we will not accept a community where sexual violence is acceptable and we don't want that any longer? We turn the focus on, well, what was she wearing? And, you know, was she drunk? And what was she doing out that late at night? And so all of those kinds of things play in, you know, to a survivor's sort of, you know, attitude about themselves, about, well, I mean, maybe I could have prevented this. But, you know, our stance is this: no matter what happened or did not happen up to the point of the assault, it is not your fault. And so we will believe every single person who walks through the door.
I'm curious about the non-belief. That happens a great deal, or it happens to a small enough percentage that it's still important?
Well, I would actually have to say it happens more than we would like for it to happen. Let me put it that way. I think you know, because we are kind of a society that we like to say, well, what could you have done to prevent this? That is putting the responsibility on the survivor of, you know, stopping this act of violence, when actually the responsibility for stopping sexual violence lies on the shoulders of those who are committing these acts of violence. So I think it's definitely, you know, a big enough problem where individuals are not, you know, feeling safe to reach out for help, which is why we so highly stress that if you call our hotline or you come into our office or you call the office during office hours and make an appointment, you will be believed and supported.
By the way, you can make your call here, and you don't have to come on air if you're concerned about your voice being heard. You can ask your question to Sean, who'll bring it in, and we'll ask it to Michelle and Aaron, or make your comment. You don't have to come on air to ask your question or speak, get your point across. 11:25 on the wake up call as we talk with Michelle Zair, Aaron Miller, through the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, or SARA, as they're known, 30th anniversary. I see the one phone line is ringing now, 979-0919. The other line is open, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. And you can also send your question online. That's WNRN Studio. So give it a moment to see if this caller wants to come on or pass their question through. At the very start of the program, you mentioned that you provide help and service for men as well as women.
Yes. Our services are for any person who experiences sexual violence. So it doesn't matter what your gender is, your race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender orientation, immigration status, it just doesn't matter. And all of our services are free. And you know, this sort of answers the intervention, and the second part of what we do for our community is the intervention side is where we have staff advocates like myself and Aaron, where individuals can come in and speak with us confidentially, and we'll help, you know, support them and listen to them and connect them with the resources that they need. We have our hotline, and then we also have a counselor on staff that can do more in-depth work with those individuals who choose that for themselves.
All right, I know I'm going to come back later in the program and ask you to repeat a lot of that. Oh, wait, here we go. Let me punch all the right buttons. Ladies, got your headphones on. Joyce, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, we have Joyce from Crozet, who's a survivor and a therapist. Joyce, question or comment?
Two things. First, I want to thank Aaron and Michelle for being so courageous and being articulate advocates for the survivors in our community. I've worked in the Charlottesville community for about 25 years now as a therapist for children and adults who've been sexually assaulted, and I've volunteered with SARA. I want to make two comments, please. I want to be sure that everyone who's listening knows that the numbers, 1 in 4 females and 1 in 8 males, are not SARA's numbers. Those are national statistics which are endorsed by the Centers for Disease Control, the American Medical Association, and the American Public Health Association, who presented those numbers to Congress in 2004. These are not imagined or local statistics. And then I wanted to comment on the issue of believing with Rick, which I think is really, really important. I cannot tell you how many children and adults, men and women, I have worked with over 2 decades who have reported their abuse to loved ones or to even the hospital or police, been told they were not believed, worse than that, been threatened that they should never mention this again. The person who they are saying did it is not capable of doing such an awful thing. They have been punished as children and adults by being physically punished or banished from the family or friendship circle. So the issue of being believed, even if your story is not entirely accurate in terms of legal belief and proof, is the first way that you establish a connection with somebody who is trying to tell their story.
Joyce,
having the subject on your program.
Joyce, I'm always at a loss, and I find myself to be so naive in so many ways. But why would you not believe someone? I mean, I understand that there are issues about culturally, identifying someone for such a serious crime, but the stigma that goes with, announcing that you have suffered this, why would anyone believe that you would choose to do that?
Rick, that's one of the best questions I've ever had. The reason is, and this is another very difficult to imagine and comprehend statistic, is that most people who sexually abuse children or sexually assault adults are loved ones. They're mostly parents and family members who assault children. It's mostly someone the adult knows who assaults the adult. So you're not believed because the same people who love you, me, myself as an incest victim, love your offender. And they cannot accept that this person they love would do something like this to another person they love.
All right, Joyce, thank you for the call, the questions, and I hope you continue the wonderful work that you do.
Thanks for your support, Rick.
Thanks. Feel free to dial up and ask your question or make your comment, as Joyce did. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Obviously, this topic goes a lot further than just the local Charlottesville phone number area. 979-0919 for those of you who are pretty much within the SARA service area, the Region 10. What were the counties again, ladies?
Those are Nelson, Fluvanna, Green, Louisa, Albemarle, and the city of Charlottesville.
All right. Michelle Zare, the adult advocate with the Sexual Assault Resource Agency. Aaron Miller here as well, representing the children from under the age of 18 and the families with them. Let me give a shout out to Blue Ridge Graphics for supporting us as we do such an important show today. Blue Ridge Graphics can be found at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts and sportswear, professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, brgtshirts.com. All right, ladies, we were talking about men also receiving service from the Sexual Assault Resource Agency. Why would a man, and I realize that the part of this is cultural, and I recognize that a man may not want to call in for similar reasons to a female, embarrassment, the stigma that we mentioned that goes with this. And as Aaron, I think you said early in the program, that especially with some of the younger crowd going, hey, well, if you respond to it, then you want it. Mm-hmm. All right. But why would a male, even who wants to talk about it, call Sarah? Because the name, the acronym, which, and I realize that's what it is, Sexual Assault Resource Agency, the acronym is a female name, or certainly sounds like one, and so it automatically turns off, I think, would turn off a male because, oh, well, they just help women. It's obviously, it's a female name. It's not Bill or something else, or even one that could go both ways.
I'm glad you asked that, because you're absolutely right. This has been a topic of conversation amongst the staff for a while now about the fact that, you know, the name sort of does point towards the fact that maybe this is a women's issue, or maybe we don't serve men, and so it's definitely something we're discussing. But I also think that right now, instead of changing the name and changing websites and all of that stuff, we would rather put our efforts into just continuing to get the message out that we are there for everybody, regardless of gender or even gender identity, which are two very different things. Aaron, did you have anything to say about this?
I just also wanted to bring up an event that we do to try to bring more men into SARA is our Walk a Mile event that we hold in the spring. It's usually in April because April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and that is when some of you may have seen we have men in the community come. They put on women's shoes, often high heels, ballet flats, whatever.
I've seen that, trying to walk the mall.
Exactly, walking down the mall, bringing attention to sexual assault and saying, you know, hey, this isn't just happening to women. This is happening to men as well, and, you know, men need to be involved. It's majority of women a lot of times are involved in the movement, and we want to reach out and get everyone involved.
Mm-hmm.
Again, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Aaron Miller and Michelle Zair, both from the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, the 30th anniversary upcoming. Can anybody go to the non-waffle breakfast that's upcoming?
I know that there are a limited number of seats, and I'm not entirely sure at this point how many have been sold, but I think we're pretty close to our max. But with that said, if you're interested in going, please call the office at 434-295-7273, and our office manager, Molly, will be able to let you know if there are any more places available. But please do call and check if you're interested in coming. It would be great to have as many people as possible attend.
All right, we have a caller from Richmond. Catherine, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
Hi. Question or comment for the ladies?
Yeah, I guess I had a comment about the how people can be victims of assault or whatever and not be believed by their family members or peer group. And I was just had an incident with a, I guess not quite a relative of mine, but she is a young child who claimed to be assaulted by her grandfather. And the problem was for her that she was a, I guess, an infrequent visitor to the house. And so it was easier for them to say that she was making it up to get more attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I think that can be a problem as far as believability.
Sure, and I think oftentimes it's easier, it's more comfortable for a family or parents or whoever to say, oh, this couldn't have happened, that's too hard to believe, and it's easier just not to believe. And so I see that a lot in child cases. And I also tell the parents it's so important to believe the child because I see the huge difference it makes in that child's life. Because oftentimes that's why they don't tell. They may have told one person, whether that's the school counselor, the teacher, a family member, and for whatever reason, that person didn't believe them. So that's oftentimes when they stop and why they don't receive help, because they try to tell someone once, and if they're not believed, they don't reach out again.
Ladies and Catherine, is there anything that shows more or less belief statistics for children who may be educationally difficult, autistic, things of that sort?
That, I think basically the way, in my opinion, if a child says something's happened, I believe them. Children don't have that ability to lie as well as adults do. And for a lot of kids, they're telling things that they would have no reason to know otherwise. So they wouldn't have that knowledge, that sexual knowledge, to be able to say this, this, and this happened to me. So that makes my job even easier to believe the child, because they don't have that knowledge to begin with. And that's what I often tell parents. If they're telling you this, it's because it's true.
Catherine, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
All right, 11:37 on the wake-up call with members from the Sexual Assault Resource Agency here in Charlottesville. Upcoming 30th anniversary of an organization originally called the Charlottesville Rape Crisis Group, but has expanded the definition from sexual assault and to something far beyond rape. Call up with your question or comment, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Ladies, one of the things that I, during my multi homework here on this is let me find the title here now. Self-defense program, realistic defense techniques. Tell me about that a little bit.
Okay, I'd love to tell you about this. This is called the RAD training, or Rape Aggression Defense Training, and this was actually developed by a former United States Marine. And basically, this training is extremely realistic. The whole training is supposed to be 12 hours. And so it's usually 3 hours at a time for like 4 Saturdays in a row. And it takes you, and it's for women. There is a men's version, but it takes a special and additional certification process. Right now, we have a staff who is certified to teach the RAD training to women. And it'll teach actual usable techniques of how to get out of holds and different situations that you may find yourself in. But it also does a lot of what we call psychoeducation, which is talking about, you know, awareness and always having an escape plan and things that you can do to stay safe, essentially. And at the very end of the 12-hour training, you put on padding, and there are actual aggressors, male aggressors who put on padding, who attack you, which can be pretty traumatizing for some folks.
Caller, please hang on and don't go anywhere. What's realistic? It makes it to me sound like that there are non-realistic training out there.
I think it's because you're actually physically practicing these moves. And at the very end of the 12-hour program, you are getting attacked and having to actually use the techniques that you've learned in the training to get out of the attack situation. Now, that may be traumatizing for some folks, especially if you've been through an assault. So we can also offer a 9-hour training or a 6 or even a 3-hour training as well. So we'll modify it to whatever the situation best fits.
All right, 11:40 on the wake-up call. Caller, I'll be with you as soon as I do all my needy tasks.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, a recent high-speed police chase through the heavily populated UVA area ended in a terrifying car crash. Should Charlottesville police have pursued the driver for what was initially a misdemeanor, or should they ever pursue at high speeds? And the Hatton Ferry, the last of its type, built nearly 150 years ago, then rebuilt in 1972 after a hurricane, and again in 1985 after a record flood. And now the Virginia Department of Transportation's multi-billion dollar budget shortfall may finally cause its end. The Hook, always free. And Buck Island Barbecue supports us today. You can find and obtain your Cajun smoked Thanksgiving turkey. Buck Island's turkeys are prepared with a Cajun rub, smoked in plum tree wood, and then culinarily cut. Buck Island offers information and supplies you need to get started. Buck Island Barbecue on Route 53 just past Monticello, or buckislandbbq.com. And the man is in the room at noon. It's Drew Thompson, Les Temps Perdue. If French isn't your thing, that's the times gone by here at NRN. Also, the 80s and 90s alternative tune, Thin In For It Next, Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, Michelle and Aaron, put your headphones on. Because Mary is with us. Mary?
Hi. I want to echo what Joyce said. Thank both Michelle and Aaron and all of the staff of SARA for all of the really important and difficult work they've done.
Thank you.
Erin, my daughter was on the phone, so you may have said this while I couldn't hear over her conversation, but can you talk about a little bit about what you hear from adolescents about how they define or describe sexual assault and maybe some of the how they understand it or misunderstand it?
I think it's hard at that age, especially because in some situations it's a tough line, like Michelle was saying before, about what was consent, what wasn't consent. Did I want this to happen? Did I not want it to happen? Because at that age, you know, they're struggling between maybe this is their first sexual encounter. So it might be an incident of, well, we did something, and then afterwards I kind of regret it. So I also do some education on what actually is sexual assault and just leaving it up to them. Like Michelle said before, it's the same with adults. You know, to ask them, did you want it to happen? Did you say yes to it? If not, then let's talk about that a little bit more and how we can go from there. But it's ultimately their choice, and to let them decide and think about what happened. And, you know, regret can have the same kind of issues with kids, especially if it's their first time. But, you know, working through that and educating them on what the difference is, you know, if they had the choice, if not. And then that kind of also gets into some of the legal issues. I know we hadn't, we brought it up a little bit in the beginning, but for younger children, say 13 and under, the law says that they can't consent to sexual contact. So that's particularly hard because let's say we have a 12 or 13 year old that's having a relationship with a 17 or 18 year old. At that age, they, you know, they're at a different place developmentally, so they can't. They're at a different place. The 18-year-old, the 17-year-old, is more mature, has more knowledge, sexual knowledge, and can take advantage of that child. And that's where the law steps in and says, "Hey, this isn't right."
Thank you. I think you just made a case for how important your prevention work is.
Sure. Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Aaron, you brought up something that that brought a flash in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Is you mentioned a younger person, and mm-hmm. I'm going to say female, who might have been their first time and then regretted it.
Mm-hmm.
Does initial consent that then becomes regret qualify as sexual assault?
No. It's in that moment. And that's when it's kind of hard for them, I think, especially like I was saying, in that first time, you know, to think about it. Go back and think about when it happened. Was this you not being able to say no? Because that's also sexual assault. If they felt like they didn't have the position to say no because
peer
of
pressure.
Exactly. Peer pressure because, once again, that person was older. They felt that, you know, or it could have been just, you know, one of those trite statements, but, you know, if you don't, I'll break up with you. If you loved me, you would do it. Those kind of comments. Or was it just a situation where it happened and now afterwards maybe you have your parents talking to you about things? Oftentimes it's a religious issue. If your religion says you're not supposed to have sex outside of marriage, that may also be a reason for your regret. And so to talk a little bit more about why you're struggling with it and kind of talking about the differences between the two.
Does Sarah or another organization that you may be familiar with offer services for someone of that age who might have regret, but it isn't necessarily sexual assault?
Well, I've done that several times. What I do, and we can talk about that a little bit more about on the intervention side, you know, a parent might come and say, "This happened. Talk to my child." And then in talking with them, the child's struggling with, did I really want this to happen? Am I, is it regret? Was this sexual assault? And that's something that I've talked about before and kind of just going through it with them, educating them on the differences, what sexual assault looks like, and then moving from there.
979-0919. 1-877-WNRN Rocks for your questions, your comments. We have Aaron Miller and Michelle Zayer here from the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, upcoming, ready to celebrate their 30th anniversary as an organization here in our community. Ladies, talk about law enforcement. That's come up a couple times now. I think the oft-used stereotype is the police not believing.
Correct.
You know, you see it, whether it's on television, whether it's in a movie about, and you mentioned it, what were you wearing?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to know, and you can separate this from our local law enforcement, if that's the need, is what sort of, what is the stereotype out there, whether it's trite or serious and definitive, in terms of the help that comes from the law enforcement in helping what you do?
Well, this is actually a really great question for the timing. You know, we can't say that all law enforcement just don't get it. It's as individualized of a reaction as it is for people to define whether or not they've been sexually assaulted. We have some fantastic law enforcement personnel in our service area, and one of the things that we're all doing to help make sure that that person who's experienced this kind of trauma, it does not feel re-victimized by the criminal justice system, is we are currently in the midst of creating what is called a SART team, or a sexual assault response team. And essentially what this is a team of first responders. So it would be the community advocate like myself, a law enforcement officer that would respond to sexual assault calls, healthcare professionals such as the nurses at UVA who do the forensic exams, and it also would include victim witness advocates and Commonwealth attorneys. And what we're literally in the middle of doing as I speak is we're meeting once a month and we're creating a SART manual for our area so that we all know how to interact, so that when a person enters the system at any point, if they come to me, if they report to law enforcement, if they show up to the hospital, our SART team can be activated and we can provide the best support humanly possible to this individual through the whole process of whatever it is they decide to do, whether it's report or go all the way through to the court system or just stop right there with getting medical attention. And, you know, we've got Officer Jenkins with Albemarle County, Officer Lewis with Charlottesville, and Officer Melissa Fielding with UVA, who are on the SART team, and they've been really, really fantastic.
Are those officers male or female?
Officer Jenkins is a male, and the other two are female.
Because one of my questions, I asked you this, I don't know if I asked you this during the program or before we started, but not all volunteers are survivor victims, correct?
That's correct. It's not a requirement. It's actually a personal boundary issue that we don't ask, and it's not a requirement that you are a survivor if you actually work in this field either.
So if someone is a survivor, do you find difficulty with that person having helpful contact with someone who isn't? Do you expect that there might be difficulty when the male police officer shows up?
That could be an issue, depending on the survivor, whether or not they have a reaction to a male police officer. But on the other side of it, as far as a survivor calling and getting someone who's maybe not a survivor, that's actually a question that we don't answer. If, say, a caller asks me, "Are you a survivor?" then my response is more, well, you know, this is about you, and I've gone through specialized training, so whether or not I'm a survivor is really not the issue. I've been given tools to help you best possible. So we have a mixed bag between the staff and our volunteers. Some of them are, some of them aren't, but all of them have received extensive training.
Very smooth.
Oh, yeah.
again, 979-0919. I'm not trying to make light of things, but I do feel that you can make things a little too sad sometimes.
Exactly.
979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number. Michelle and Aaron here from Sexual Assault Resource Agency. We're talking about the topic, and we're taking your questions or comments if you have one. On the website, again, saracville.org,
mm-hmm, yes.
I believe.
Yes, that's right.
There was talk about... and I can't find my line now. Oh, what we can do to protect ourselves against sexual violence. And it didn't list, there wasn't a top 10 list or anything there. But the things that came to mind were things that I've heard throughout, you know, my life, you know, the high school, the college, you know, classes on the topic. And, you know, don't go out alone at night, ladies. Don't leave your drunk friend behind, even if she's having such a good time. But what are some non-basic rules and suggestions that are out there from Sarah?
Okay, great question. First, I just have to state that the true answer to that is that it's the responsibility to end sexual violence, like I said, I think once before, is on the shoulders of the people who are committing these acts of violence. With that said, some things that we can all do as a community is to support and embrace a message that we don't want this in our community. So, for instance, if you're with your group of friends, men or women, and you hear your friend making a disrespectful comment about wanting, you know, to get some tonight or whatever, then call them on that and say, hey, that's not an appropriate respectful comment. So holding each other accountable is one thing that we can all do. On a more practical level, which is what the RAD training also talks about, is just your basic common sense stuff that we learned from our parents growing up about just personal safety in general. You know, be aware of your surroundings. If you are out, and it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, if you're out by yourself, make sure somebody knows where you are. You know, essentially, though, if something were to happen to you, we cannot prevent another human being from committing an act of violence if they choose to do that. So we are still in the position of saying pretty much we can take some of these steps to be safer, but we can't necessarily protect ourselves foolproof from those who choose to do this.
11:54 on the wake-up call. Let me thank Ananda. Ananda is the Charlottesville Community Center for Conscious Living and Alternative Healing Practices, with a focus on mind-body integration and soul-level living. They offer massage and energy revitalization and stress relief. Ananda, off the downtown mall next to Vinegar Hill Theater. For more info, it's AnandaWellnessCenter.com. And this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg, as we talk about the Sexual Assault Resource Agency and the organization and some of the topics that go along with what they do. Texting was mentioned earlier, and then Michelle, you mentioned taking calling it on people. What does a parent do? What suggestions does Sarah have for the parent who finds that their child is, I believe the phrase is, sexting, sending dirty text messages back and forth with their friends or girlfriends or boyfriends?
Well, I think that's tough because each parent has their own way of disciplining and talking with their child. But some suggestions may be to sit down and talk with them and to really explain the reasons why it's not a good idea. A lot of kids, especially around the preteen ages, have a hard time thinking about the future, how maybe I send this text or this email to one person, and then they forward it on to all of their friends, and their friends on to their friends, and what those consequences may be. And especially as far as email and Facebook and MySpace, that all that stuff still lingers after the fact. So right now at 13 or 14, it might seem like a good idea to post that picture. But as a parent, to be able to explain and say, you know what, when you're 18 or 19 and you're looking to apply to colleges or a job, that those people also know that that stuff's out there. And they're going to get online and see, hey, what does this person have online? What kind of person are they? So that stuff lingers and that can have consequences later on.
By the way, for those of you who are joining us late and I see the phone ringing now, you can find the entire program as a podcast on SeavillePodcast.com. So if you want to go back and listen, if you want to pass it along to someone who you think might benefit from listening to this, if you only caught half the program, SeavillePodcast.com. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Ladies, take a moment and talk about volunteering while we wait for this call.
Okay. We have, of course, plenty of volunteer opportunities. Our volunteer coordinator's name is Lori Jean. And basically, there's two sort of routes that we have as options. There's an outreach volunteer, which would be individuals who go through some training, and then they can go to community events and sort of represent Sarah. And then there are hotline advocate volunteers, and that involves some pretty intensive training over multiple weeks where you learn how to do crisis intervention and you learn about our community resources. And if you want some more information about that, you can go onto our website of sarahseville.org and look under volunteer opportunities and learn how to contact Lori Jean and ask her about becoming a volunteer.
You have an award coming up, correct, right? Didn't I read that on the 30th anniversary issue, the Annette Grimm Award? What's that?
Well, that's basically to honor Annette Grimm for the work that she did with basically taking the organization from a total volunteer, part-time director situation to expanding it where they had funding and they were having more programs and a much higher impact in the community. And so this is all sort of coordinated with our 30th anniversary, wanting to honor her and her work and also the other founders of our organization.
Can you recommend someone who hasn't called you, you feel as though, or I feel as though they won't call you for whatever reason. Can I call and sort of start the process? Can I call Sarah, speak with someone and say, look, my sister has had this happen to them, but for whatever reason, she's sort of withdrawn about it.
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
Well, First of all, we deal with what we call secondary survivors, which are parents, friends, other family members. We also talk with other service providers and answer their questions as well. So if you have someone and you'd say, you know, I have this family member, what are things that I can do? We can give you some tips and ultimately also say, you know, remember that we're also here for them. So give them our number, and also helping that person realize that we also want to give that survivor that choice and that power to be able to say, okay, now I'm ready to call, because they're not always ready. So we like to give them that choice.
All right. Time to finish up here. Michelle Zare and Aaron Miller, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you so much.
And last opportunity here, let's toss out that toll-free hotline number for anybody who might be listening.
Okay, the number is 434-977-7273, and it is a 24-hour confidential hotline.
And you can also call Collect. It's a Charlottesville number, but if you're out of the area for whatever reason, you can call the number Collect.
All right. Thank you, ladies. And continue with the good work. It's obviously a needy, unfortunately, a much needed organization and service.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Next week, boys and girls, we're going to be talking about peer pressure with two University of Virginia professors who have put a lot of work into studying peer pressure. And what happens? Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.